punk and the schooner. No one is punk. And the schooner. No one is punk and the schooner. No one is punk and the schooner.
So, show number 18 of Noise Punk and Dust Crooner. I am Dust Crooner. Gene, who in God's name are you?
Yo, I'm Noise Punk, yo. This is show number 18, and we got a very special guest.
Another you always say that, though, but it's true.
Why you gotta interrupt me, man?
Because you interrupt me.
We got a very special guest, a composer, a lady composer. This is our second one in a row, I think. I think we had a last month, a lady composer, yes?
Yes.
Okay, and her name is Judith.
Judith Lang-Zaymon. Welcome to our program. How are you?
I'm fine, but I'm not a lady composer. Right. I'm a composer for the Cap C.
I was going to say that, but...
I meant sometimes we have men here, sometimes we have ladies, and sometimes we have others.
Yeah.
Like Dan Barrett when he came. We don't know
which
who he
is. What the hell is he?
He was a little bit of both.
Yeah, and one wonders.
Neither.
But anyway, obvious first question. You were an established composer. You're on faculty at Queen's College, correct?
No, not for
don't
many
make
years.
Up information.
For the last 15 years or so, I've been heading the comp program at the University of Minnesota.
I beg your pardon.
In Minneapolis. And
thank you, Gene.
For the last actual year, I have been out in the world just as a composer.
There you go.
I finally emancipated myself.
Yes, you should. Wonderful. Listen, you're established. I think you recently you were recently at the Aaron Copland House like 2-3 years ago?
Yes, that was a magnificent experience. It was magical. Just touching things that he had touched, copying my score at his table, sitting at his piano, and a really great thing. Actually, I was just telling Fran Richard this yesterday at ASCAP. On the way downstairs to where all the nitty-gritty of the house is, the furnace and the washing machines and all of that, underneath the stairwell, behind cobwebs, were all of the film cues for The Red Pony. So I pull 4 or 5 of those out and bring them up to eat with my breakfast cereal so I could touch something else that Copland had touched.
Wow.
It was great.
Now we know
it
what he thought of that score.
I've seen pictures.
He was heating his house. Oh, my.
We like to think not, but we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
When you're such a genius. But anyway, on that thought, let's hear music. What would you like to play for us?
What Young Artak is going to play for you is a piano solo piece titled Wizards. It's the first track on this CD. And it is a piece that shows off many facets of what a piano player can do. It was commissioned as actually the required competition piece for the 2003 San Antonio International Piano Competition, where Ms. Tuck won the silver medal, but really played the heck out of my piece. So
that's cool.
It's called Wizards.
Wizards.
Three Magic Masters, and it condenses in about 8 minutes. A whole lot of stuff that a pianist is supposed to be able to do.
I try to write piano music that things a pianist is not supposed to be able to do at all.
Yeah.
And usually that's how it comes out. And
so we're on different sides of a single border, I think.
I smell a fight coming on. Well, maybe not. But anyway.
Just with you, Charles, but that's a regular
that's
part of the
right.
show.
Wizards by three subtitled. Yeah. Let's try that again. Wizards.
Man, you're messing this whole show up, man.
Yeah, I always do that. Wizards, Three Magic Masters, played by pianist Young Artak, here on Noise Punk and Dust Crooner.
Thank you.
Wizards by our guest Judith Lang Zaymont for solo piano, written in 2003 here on Noise Punk and Das Crooner.
Yo, read the movements, yo.
Yeah, well, first of all, the pianist was Young Ah Tak, and you mentioned the three magic masters, their names.
Yes, the first one is Spell Weaver, and that's all for the left hand to show that it can crunch and growl. The second is Spell Spinner, brings the tessitura of the music up to the center of the piano in a much more arpeggio, more Chopin Rachmaninoff layout. Yeah, sure. The last one is Magister, the chief wizard, and he's all of that hammering that you hear.
The Prokofiev toccata type kind of well, not necessarily Prokofiev.
No, Opus 11 of Prokofiev's a knuckle buster.
You're
this
right.
One isn't.
Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right.
Stop insulting our guests.
Hey, shut up already. Here on Noise Punk and Das Crooner.
Anyway, that was some serious. Wait, what's the pianist's last name?
Young Ah Tak.
Miss Tak. That was quick. It's like a tak. You know, he's attacking the piano. It was an aggressive piano. I was just saying it was very. We were noticing the piano playing and we had a little piano conversation. Oh, I wish we would have recorded. What great radio it would be. But
yeah. You can say it all over again. Okay. One of the things being that I am a pianist, as I think some listeners might know, and certainly you could tell from this music.
Yeah.
And so I have stored up in my head and my heart and my fingers the entire repertoire, as much as I know,
right.
That's mainline piano. And therefore, I didn't write for piano solo significant statements until rather late, or I should say more recently in my compositional career.
Ooh.
Which is something that wouldn't stop me in writing for any other instrument.
Right.
I just jump in there and import my vision on the timbre and the mechanics of other instruments.
Right.
But sometimes, like Gene was saying, for him, piano music is maybe not so natural, so you're more ready to jump in and wrestle it around in your own design, isn't that
well,
right?
I mean, like any instrument that you don't know. You know, we write for orchestras, but we don't play flutes, clarinets, and violins,
true.
Right?
Very
so, like
true.
Any instrument, what you do is you study the great rep, what could be done. So, you know, I went through, like, the Chopin etudes, you know, which is basically, you know, or if you're writing for violin, you go through the Paganini caprices and stuff like that to see what could be done, and then I go to the next level.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
you have to take it to the next
level.
Next level. But the interesting thing for me was it took me so long in my output to come back and write for the piano as a solo statement.
Right,
I'm
right.
very respectful of all that's been done by composers that came before me. That doesn't mean that I don't see something new inside my head.
Right,
it means
right.
that I carry that baggage around and I had to deal with it. I had to figure out where to put all of that wow for music in the past that's always with me in my own instrument. I had to figure out how I could put that away to the side before I could do something that I thought was original for the piano.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just say blatantly steal.
No.
You just change a couple of notes and that's
exposed here, right here on Noise. Exposed here, right here on Noise, Punk and Dust Crooner.
Charles, another word from you.
Yeah.
And you'll be walking funny.
Yeah.
All
word about this.
Yeah.
No stealing, please.
No,
they say that the sincerest form of flattery is to borrow.
Yes.
You want to call it borrowing, that's something else.
There
but stealing, nah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you like to play for us next?
Well, I call it stealing because I actually mugged them. Yes, please. We're having a very nice. This is odd for Noise Punk and the Screw because it's a Thursday afternoon, which I think is the first time we've ever had. We either have evening concerts or Saturday afternoon concerts. Shows, I'm sorry. That we usually do. This is the first time we had a Thursday afternoon. And it's
you just made history here on Noise Punk. Yeah.
Judith comes from
which
far
we'll remember
away
for the next 10 seconds. But anyway.
Charles, don't undermine me.
Okay.
But now,
yes,
for this nice Thursday afternoon, we would like to hear more music. And Judith, what do you have?
What's your desire?
I think let's have something that's not piano solo.
Yeah. Thank you, Gene.
Let's turn to something somewhat different.
Charles,
one of the things that's a sidelight in my music always is my great love for jazz.
Cool.
Now, I'm not a born jazzer, and don't ask me anything about rock music.
Right.
But
that was my next question.
Right.
What's Ozzy's real name? Come on.
Talk about your final exams. This is the third movement of a four-movement piece for five instruments, which is called Hidden Heritage, a Dance Symphony. Mm-hmm. Now, I need this one has a program note that we need to hear before we listen.
Okay.
The piece was commissioned by an African-American ensemble, dance company, in Baltimore. And it is based on a traveling exhibit of African-American paintings and sculptures for the century between 1850 and 1950. And so the choreographer and I, who happened to have fellowships from the state of Maryland in the same year, we met at one of their celebrations. We sat down and devised this piece. And the each movement is based on one or up to between one and three works of visual art. Mm-hmm. So this is the third movement. It comes as what would be the scherzo place in a four-movement symphony. It's called Street Scene, and it's based on two paintings. One is an empty street. All you see is the traffic light. Mm-hmm. And the second is a street that is absolutely crowded with people. It looks like Harlem in the 1930s. Everybody's out there and they strut. Even though it's a picture, you can see they are strutting back and forth, dressed to the high nines.
Oh, yeah.
And it is, it's a glorious panoply of color. What did I want to do? You'll hear an empty street, which is cello solo with bongos. Mm. Then you'll hear that morphs its way into a bebop scherzo in 5/8 in B flat minor for the entire ensemble.
Oh, that's
there
all
are a
wrong.
Couple of little things. There are a couple of little things in this one that are sort of interesting. Just before the trio, because this is an echt scherzo form, scherzo
right.
trio, scherzo
right.
with the empty street intro.
Right.
There is a conversation between the percussionist playing triangle and the pianist who plays a hotel bell in F sharp. So you will hear this pong back and forth.
Right.
I had to get that as a way to introduce this. And
I only stay at G flats. I only stay at G flat hotels.
What?
I only stay at hotels with G flat bells.
G flat bells. Okay. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm
or
saying.
Or A double flat. Oh, whatever.
Yes. That would be. That would be a G. Triple flat.
That would be a triple flat.
A
it's
triple
an E double sharp.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Charles, you don't know theory at all, man.
When was the last time you wrote for harp?
Yeah.
When you
I know,
for
exactly.
harp, you have to deal
that's,
with all those enharmonics.
So let's hear a movement from Hidden Heritage, a dance symphony written in 1987. The movement Street Scene featuring an ensemble of players conducted by Doris Kozloff here on Noise Punk and Dust Crooner.
Now, can you repeat that and without the nastiness?
What?
Track number three. Okay, so here's some music by Judith, who's visiting us in New York here on Thursday afternoon. Street Scenes, like, get it going. Let's hear the music. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Street Scene, a movement from the piece Hidden Heritage by our guest Judith Lang Zaymont here on Noise Punk and Dust Schooner. What? Sorry. Are you making fun of me again?
What?
Let me do it again then.
Peace.
Yeah.
Judith? We were digging it. We're totally hipping it.
Nothing like a 5/8 to get your body moving. Or
You got it. Dance music is in us all, but very, very much in me.
That's right. Yeah.
Charles can dance to save his life. I've tried to waltz with him, but no.
Yeah, we have a special relationship, don't we? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even though we're both married.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was a sound effect from Noise Punk the Schooner. Let's go on with the. Or did you? You wanted to say something?
Yeah,
a couple of things.
Yes.
First of all, the conductor is my sister.
That's right. We forgot to mention that.
And I think that probably might be interesting to explore just for a second. Darce and I grew up right here in New York City.
Oh yeah.
And we were yoked together as kids right after we entered Juilliard Prep. We were 11 and 12,
mm-hmm.
and the first thing they said was, well, the two of you should play together. And so we have this hidden career as a duo piano team throughout our teen years,
right.
And until we both finished college and went our separate ways in graduate school. We did a lot. We played all the standard two-piano rep, and so are very attuned to one another musically, and she's a fantastic conductor.
That's great.
And that's all I need to say about
that's
it.
Did you ever write a piece for four hands, one piano?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't planning to play it.
No, you don't have to
play
it.
This is one of those sins of my youth. I was in Paris for a year on some kind of fellowship and got extremely homesick for America and wrote the snazzy sonata for piano four hands just for my sister and myself to play. Not a commission. I wanted to write a piece that our father could listen to and track with it the whole way through. So it is based on dance rhythms, again, very strong in my music. Yeah. Each movement is a different dance idiom from successive decades of the 20th century, but they're in standard sonata form. So mm-hmm. the sonata allegro is a two-step. The song form, second movement, is a beguine. The third movement is a bebop scherzo.
Right.
The fourth movement is a grand valse brillante, like one of those Broadway overtures with the tunes coming back in and
again.
A big rondo form.
Right, right.
And the amazing thing is that I came back from Paris and I was on Bob Sherman's show, the old show on WQXR, mm-hmm. and he asked what would I like to do. So I invited my sister in. We played a couple of movements from the snazzy sonata, and they got phone calls from five states for people wanting to know where they could get the music for it.
Well,
this piece
good.
has been played around the world. It's been adapted for several different media. There's a Bayon ensemble in Lithuania that got permission from the publisher to adapt the first movement, the two-step, for their ensemble.
Cool.
So you never know. Composers never know when you're writing something that's going to really connect with somebody else. But this piece, this was so that there'd be no wrinkles in the listening. You could hear it plain from beginning to end.
I always want to write a piece for four pianos, one hand.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you have just one hand, and the guy's got to go around. You think this will take? Oh, this is not going to work.
Yeah. No. How about for 2 feet or a nose? Yeah.
Yes. My sister has played a piece that called for nose on the keyboard.
All right. Yes. Okay. Clusters.
Charles has played a piece. The guy's called My Ass. Sorry. Okay.
Did I mention that you're Jerry Lewis and I'm Dean Martin in this duo?
I mention it's Thursday afternoon and I'm extremely hungover? But we're here.
Speak for yourself.
We're Judith and we're hearing some very hip music. I'm digging it. It's picking me up. It's waking me up. It's like coffee.
Oh, well, this next one is going to do it for you. It is not the snazzy sonata. That was a whole sidebar.
But maybe we'll play it in the end.
You could play a movement from it if you want.
Maybe
if
later
we
on.
So feel like it.
You so choose. The next piece is for Symphonic Wind Ensemble.
Cool.
It's the first movement of my Symphony for Wind Ensemble in Three Scenes, I call it, because the movements, you've noticed I don't have any absolute music titles.
You mean
sonata be snazzy sonata.
You and me are on the same wavelength. We've had this conversation before, and I am 100, and people know who hear this, I'm 100% against names like symphonies and sonatas because, and the only reason is because those names, for me, associate certain forms. So if I'm writing symphony,
the symphony came out of like a certain, you know, sonata allegro form in the beginning, second movement, third movement, for, you know, and all that stuff, which I don't particularly might want to do in a piece, even though it's a big orchestral piece. So I would never call it.
I certainly track with you there, Gene.
Yeah, I don't know if you
although the word symphony just means sounding together. So
right.
For a lot of people to just, you know, to get up there and do something that's more or less coherent together.
Right.
And that sonata makes
means
it a symphony.
Sound. Yeah,
but
yeah.
The issue of form is really something.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, for me, picking programmatic titles has to do with anything to give a listener a window in on what they might expect that they're about to hear.
I agree with that, too.
This. Yeah. I always try to mention to audiences ahead of time how long the new piece is, because I want them to stay, you know, not think it's going to track in 2 minutes. If
right.
it's 8, 9, 10 minutes, right. 16,
that's a good
23
idea.
Minutes. You really want people to be ready. Right.
You tell them it's like 20 minutes, and then when it's over, like in 8 movements, they're all happy about it.
Oh, good. Oh, well, yeah, that's a different thing. From one big chunk for that amount of time.
Right, right, right.
So this is the first scene of the three scenes in my Symphony for Wind Orchestra. It is called Growler.
Growler.
And it is, the sounds are kind of big and complex. It is in very short segments, so you really have to know that, even though it's only 6 minutes. There are like bursts. You'll hear this opening screaming howl come back 2 more times in the piece, and in between there are 2 tiny little percussion cadenzettes
Cadenzette. I've never heard that before.
Well, I made up the term. It's like
brilliant.
I like
calling it's like calling a little grocery store a superette, which always kills me because it's a prefix and a suffix. It doesn't tell you it's a super grocery yet. It's just, you know, so
like calling Charles Brain Brainette.
Yeah.
Right.
I think all of us feel at times like we are only housing brainettes, right?
Yeah.
This one actually is 6 minutes, and I timed out the opening event so it would be 30 seconds on the nose, and it came pretty close to
all
that.
Right, close
cool. Let's do it. What is it? Growl.
Growl.
Growler.
I like growler.
It's a beast.
Yes. An excerpt from the Symphony for Wind Ensemble here on by Judith Lang Zaymont here on Noise Punk and
Dustgrunner.
Hey! by Judith Lang Zaymond here on Noise Punk and Das Crooner.
Wow, that was some serious. That woke me up. You know, I had to even actually get a cup of coffee because that piece was kicking me in the head. So that was growl was the title. I mean, and this we talked a little about titles and about how I don't like the name symphonies, and Judith kind of saw me a little on that. But this title is a cool title. I was wondering. A lot of my titles have literary, like a book I'm reading, you know, a lot of Dickens and stuff. I don't know if this growler just came from... Give her the mic.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
The growler is a big beast. I don't know what it looks like, but I know that it groans and it howls. So
it's a
growler.
Well, it fit perfectly.
I wanted to say something about this. I mentioned those two small percussion forward moments in here.
Condensettes, I think.
Condensettes, right. The second one, I knew what I wanted from it, but the pacing wasn't very good in my first sketches. I wrote it out on plain paper, just try to get where the wood block was going to come in, make sure that was in the right place. And then my husband and I went to see Star Wars number one. You said Charles?
Phantom Menace.
Phantom Menace.
Charles
and there is a moment in there where Anakin and whoever his guardian is are being chased by this assassin, Zam the assassin,
right.
And there it is only a percussion score.
Is that
so
Williams?
This was the first time we're watching the movies. I'm always taking things down in notation when I hear music I'm interested in.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
cool.
What I did was I paced the Williams. I paced the Williams where he had these little explosions in this up-tempo score, and I kind of borrowed two phrases from him.
Uh-huh.
So I could get...
Back to the ceiling.
Borrowing.
That borrowing, right. You call that priming the pump is what it was. It got me with the correct scansion for it, and from then I was off and running. But we all know on a split second, I think, when we're hearing something that's really special in some way or another, and I'm always trying to write these things down. When I go to a concert, I'll pull out pieces of paper and write things down. The last time I heard Fratra, I made notes on my program for a piece called Sœurs, Sisters, flute and piano instead of violin and piano.
That's
and I haven't written this piece yet, but I have a little head motif and all of that. When it's so funny hearing music or hearing sounds from the natural world just prompts things that we can't anticipate they're going to be in our heads, but they're there. They have to come down. The hard thing is having paper around so I can catch them.
Yeah.
That's why I always carry around the full scores of Vivaldi and an eraser. do the opposite. I erase them. No, I joke. No, I love Vivaldi. In fact, our theme song is Vivaldi.
Do you? I mean, Vivaldi, he's the master of the sequence.
I know. The sequence was great.
Generations of students, music students and composers think they can get away.
With
you know, you get your little nugget, your little gesture, whatever it is, you're going to repeat it a step higher or a step lower, and you can do it 5, 6, 7 times.
Exactly.
Because you have an example that does
it. I don't want to get into a whole Vivaldi like or dislike, and I know the things you're talking about, but definitely some melodic content that Vivaldi had.
Yes.
His melodies are just incredible.
Yes,
what he does with it, maybe, you know, it doesn't develop great.
No. But he's not the one at fault. It's the students.
Yeah,
it's always students who don't know when enough is enough.
And they don't know how to do it well.
Right.
That's another thing. I mean, obviously, he has same progressions from piece to piece, but melodically, man, he was up there, man. I like that guy. I like that Italian redhead. didn't they call him like... All right, no.
Speaking of well done, we should go to your elegy for strings.
What a good segue, Charles.
This is just like Monty Python, and now for something completely different.
Yes, a man with three buttocks. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
Charles.
This is as different from growler as can be. This is music that is quiet and sustained. It is... supposed to be like 8 or 9 minutes long. I don't know how long the recording actually is.
Well, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. But it is entirely for string orchestra.
Right.
It is a piece that was written when my aunt died, way, way too early. She was ill in the last parts of her life. She had some British strands in her heritage, and so being a person who really loves the Ray Vaughan Williams fantasy on a theme of Thomas Tully.
Yeah.
Piece.
A great, great, great piece. I tried to make this piece a little bit British. in the way it sounds, and it is it's an elegy for a beloved person who's not with us anymore, for string orchestra.
Who's the ensemble?
It is the Czech Radio Orchestra, conducted by Doris Koslov.
Her sister.
It's her sister. You know what I say when I go to a Czechoslovakian restaurant after I eat? Czech.
Yeah. You see, I knew that was coming, you moron.
I have to say that joke once a day. It's the law. Yeah, okay, let's hear the music. Announce it, Charles.
Elegy. Well, it's not Elegy for String. Will you shut up with that?
Yeah, this thing is Elegy for Strings.
Elegy for Strings by Judith Lang Zamond, our guest here on Will You Shut Up? Here,
Charles drooling.
Hey, thank you.
Charles is drooling.
Here on Noise Funk and Das Gruner. Thank you. Elegy for Strings by our guest Judith Lang Zeymond here on Noise Punk and Das Kuhner. That was the Czech Radio Symphony Orchestra conducted by Judith Lang Zeymond's sister,
Doris Koslov.
The only Doris Koslov.
Now everybody's going to know she's your sister. Now you can't hide.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Well, that was a beautiful piece, and we kind of heard in the background, but we were here in a heated, not heated, but we were like in very cool discussion about music, which I always like, even in a hangover. I don't know if we want to retrace some of that.
We were talking about the many different ways in which music is in the fabric of our lives and how a composer might need to adjust. Somebody who's multifaceted like Eugene, who does film here or jingle there or DJ there, your own pieces, your own on-the-spot composition.
I'm also a rapper, you know.
Oh, rap.
He's a rapper.
You haven't heard my hip-hop band,
that
have
I don't want to touch.
No, you got to hear my hip-hop. I'm going to play Judith my hip-hop music a bit later.
No, but it keeps music very real. How do you separate your categories?
I don't. That's,
he doesn't that have is, a category. That's his attitude.
I have only one category, music. And
thank
good
you.
Music and bad music and music written by me, great music. No, I'm joking. We're talking about being arrogant.
Dumb.
I win.
I guess the thing is that not all great music is music that's been written down, is what I think I...
Writing down, I'm actually a big writer down. I write down everything. Even my electronic music, it's all like very meticulously and just notated, some kind of OCD I have or something.
And when do you sleep?
Sleeping is optional. But but the thing is, I agree with... But I only write down... Because I think writing down music, because I'm thinking of far future, when I'm not around, when this can be duplicated or replicated, and if there is, you know, and that's really... I mean, in these days with recordings, obviously, it's different than when in Bach's time when they wrote it down. But
yes, but the other part of this is, I think some composers today have given up on the idea of their music as being durable. Because
this is
music
true.
Is so needed as a product. Yeah. It's in the air around us in any kind of public space, which I object to violently, but there it is. And so you have to have that product. And Muzak can't do it all. There have to be other people producing.
I agree with you.
Void fillers, we are. You know it here on Noise Punk.
I agree with you that people have given up, but I haven't.
Me neither.
And even though I'm writing whatever, hip hop and DJing and okay, whatever, it's all the thing, but I'm still thinking just the same way, I guess, Bach or whoever those guys thought when they wrote down their music and they wrote it down. Bach improvised all that stuff. He didn't need to write down a lot of that stuff, but he wrote it down, I think, for future, for other people to play, for future generations.
I always write it down.
Yeah.
So.
As you should.
And I think that's important.
Speaking of writing things down, what's next?
Oh, Charlton, you segues.
We have the last movement of my saxophone quartet.
Yay,
and the piece is called Parallel Play.
All right.
And the three movements are titled Fanfare, Folk Song, and Folderol. And we're hearing the third movement, which is Folderol, but it's actually a little bit darker than that. It's very jazzy.
Mm-hmm. Who's the quartet?
Oh, Presidio Saxophone Quartet from Tucson. This is going to be the lead piece on their upcoming CD out later this year.
Wonderful. Cool. Let's hear it. We're almost running out of time, but we want to hear more music by Judith. So the sax quartet, Charles, announce it.
Music of Judith Lang Zeymond here on Noise Punk and Das Kuhner.
Scooter!
Play by our guest Jude Lang Zaymon. That was a movement entitled Fold Roll, played by the Presidio Sax Quartet here on Noise Punk and Dust.
Power play is what Charles does when he's around people, because he's still a little child.
More characteristic, I think, of two-year-olds, how they interact or don't.
You don't know Charles. Okay, we're over the time, but we like the music so much we want to hear more.
We couldn't
more
resist.
So
thanks, guys. Yeah. Thanks.
So, one more. What's the last piece? This is a ragtime, right?
Yes, this is a concert rag for flute and piano. It's called Bubble Up Rag. It is, just simply let me say, it's a fun piece to play. It out-tongues the Hindemith Flute Sonata. I've been told by the flutist that play it, you have to have really fast tonguing. It's just like, form-conscious folks listening, it's a five-part rondo. You don't need to know anything of that. Just listen and enjoy.
For those form-conscious folks listening, stop listening!
and just enjoy.
Just sit back. Who are the players?
Emmanuel Davis is a flutist, and Nanette Kaplan Solomon is pianist.
Mm-hmm. Here on Noise Punk and Das Crooner.
Thank you.
Ending on a high E for a flute above the
orchestration book. Right, that's a higher note than the orchestration book say is possible for the flute.
Exactly. Bubble Up Rag by our guest, Jutz Lang Zaman. That was Emmanuel Davis on flute along with Nanette Solomon on the piano.
Did you switch the piccolo?
No.
Just made it do it.
It wouldn't sound like at the end
that's
there,
true.
But it was brilliant. And yeah, that'll do it here on Noise Punk and Dust. Current Jutz Lang Zaman, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, thank you very much.
What's up next for you?
Oh, yeah, give us some.
Oh, a couple of things. I have some big pieces coming up, two huge choral things, a string quartet, a concerto for piano and wind orchestra, and also a CD release in spring 07 of an entire CD of my concert rags.
Cool. As it should be. The focus being the composer, Jutz Lang Zaman. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
It was tremendous fun.
All right.
Thank you for joining us here on show number 18.
And here comes the theme music.
Oh, snap, I hear it.
And that'll do it for another episode of Noise Punk and Dust Crooner. And until next time, noise to you.
Noise Punk and Dust Crooner. Noise Punk and Dust Crooner. Noise Punk and Dust